On episode 2 of the Thrill Geek podcast, we discuss Halloween Horror Nights, Screamageddon in Tampa, SeaWorld's Halloween Spooktacular, Terminator 2 3D closing, and Epcot's 35th anniversary.
And we have the latest theme park and pop culture news, including our reaction to the new Star Wars The Last Jedi and Justice League trailers, all this and more on the Thrill Geek podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm Clint.
I'm Barry.
And we just wanted to say thank you, everyone, for listening to the first Thrill Geek podcast, first and foremost. We had lots of constructive criticism from people on social media, Twitter, Facebook. I reached out to people, see what they thought, and we made some changes, and hopefully for the better, and we're going to try this thing again, so...
We'll try to not say the word a lot.
Yeah, we're going to try and eliminate that. That was one thing we noticed a lot. So,
if we had a drinking game for the first podcast, it would have been drink every time you hear us say and you die of alcohol poisoning after 5 minutes.
I was going to say you would have been dead. So, first on the agenda today is we're going to briefly touch on Busch Gardens Williamsburg, little announcement for 2018. They announced a virtual reality VR attraction, however you want to say it, called, I'm hoping I'm saying this right, Battle for Ear. I'm not Irish, so work with me on that. But... it'll be coming in 2018, and Barry, did you have?
It's going into Ireland. I'm assuming it's going into the spot that used to have a previous simulator. I'm assuming I forgot the names of it. It's been so many different things. It's been like I think two different simulators in that location. But it's supposed to be a motion-based theater simulator mixed with VR headsets, so we'll see how that is.
I have the press release here, and it says, team up with the last fairy guardian, Addie, A-D-D-I-E, and set out to rescue the sacred heart of Eir. Hang on tight as you soar above the lush landscapes and mystifying powers of the other world. So...
It'll be interesting to see how it ends up being, but once again, along with any every other VR thing they've done, any park's done, capacity.
Yep.
People have to put on headsets. That takes time. And I'll be interested to see. No one has solved the capacity problem with VR.
It actually says here on the website that VR headsets, which are tethered to the motion simulator seats, will connect to guests' head mounts via magnetic closure. It'll be filmed in 4K resolution. So
we'll see if I guess you may put on a thing before you get in there. I'm assuming it's probably some sort of like a cap. And then it connects with magnets, so that might speed up the process somewhat.
Yeah.
And of course, the fact that it's a motion simulator, there's not the worry of having to literally strap it on like you do on a coaster.
Yeah, you don't have the shoulder restraints or anything else to slow down the loading process, as we've seen on Kraken Unleashed at SeaWorld, where the load times have been absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I just VR on a coaster, as neat of a trick as it may be, I just don't see them ever figuring out how to fix the problem of loading and capacity. Even if you built it from the ground up, it's still the amount of time it takes to load and check.
Yep.
It doesn't matter.
Strapped on and all that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you have a load or unload and a space in between. It's still the amount of time it takes to make sure they're strapped, and all that. And I don't know. Unless someone creates some sort of technology to solve that problem, I see we could possibly see a few years from now that all these VR installations are gone because it provides no, it's the capacity sucks.
I'm hoping this VR thing is a fad because I've never been a fan of it. Ever since the Six Flags one started to pop up, I finally got to do it on, or I did the Fun Spot one, which was actually, for some reason, more enjoyable than Kraken Unleashed. I mean, the VR on Kraken Unleashed is great. It's well done. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I just didn't enjoy it. I was really nauseous, which was unfortunate because the VR is really well done. Some of the best VR I've seen for a coaster. I haven't been able to get into the whole VR thing. It's not me.
I think until we reach the point where it's either it's like a pair of glasses you put on or augmented reality.
I'm excited about that. I mean, I know Universal's been, I think it's Universal. There was some patents or something that showed up with them possibly. I may be wrong.
That's the talk with Super Nintendo World with the Mario Kart attraction is it's going to be augmented reality. It's like you're going to be on a cart, but you'll have the eyewear that will allow, like, you know, the different things to look like they're coming at you, because it's supposed to be a physical attraction.
Yeah,
but it's supposed to use some type of augmented reality. So we'll see. I mean, there's definitely a future in VR augmented reality. It's just solving the issue of capacity. And I'm sure when we go to IAPA this year, there's going to be a lot of VR.
Yeah.
And some things like the VR where you are like we have I think it's in Point Orlando, where you put on the VR mask and you've got like a gun and you're walking basically in a warehouse, but what you're seeing is a game.
The zombie laser tag or whatever it was last year.
That has got some potential.
That was really cool. I did that last year at IAPA and that was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, to me, that has plenty of potential. Obviously, I don't know how much you could do that on a theme park level, but it just VR on rides, it's just we've got a ways to go, I think.
Definitely.
For them, they've got to figure out a way to make this easier and until the loading is as quick as or close to as quick as a regular roller coaster, I just think it's going to continue to be something that just is going to end up being a fad because it's, you know, people don't. I don't know how well guests have reacted to the fact that they can't ride Kraken or they have to sign up for a thing to be able to ride Kraken. And
they're waiting 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah, and you took a coaster that whether it was busy or not, it still had people riding it all the time. And so now you have a coaster that barely anybody gets to ride in the park. So
yep.
We'll see.
So, on the first podcast, we did nothing but theme park stuff. So now we actually have some really interesting pop culture things to talk about. Two new trailers that have debuted recently, and I'm sure everyone knows one. And I'm going to let you, Barry, discuss the newly released Justice League trailer. Which, when did that come out?
That came out Sunday morning at 9 a.m., which I think was very... I don't know if Warner Brothers knew when Star Wars was going to release their trailer, but it was smart to get it out
first.
And so they, first, so they at least had a day and a half of time to... people would be focused on that. And we all know the DC movie universe has had its ups and downs. I mean, I liked Man of Steel. I don't hate Batman versus Superman as much as a lot of people do. It's not a perfect film. It's got a lot of problems. There's a lot of good things in it. And obviously the best thing about it was Wonder Woman. And then the Wonder Woman movie this summer, to me, was the best movie of the summer. And it obviously went on to be, I believe, the highest grossing, at least, U.S. movie of the summer, and it was very good. It was very well done.
Yeah.
So
I think that movie actually helped revive the DC universe, because they were really struggling for something to stick.
Yeah, no, and now a lot is riding on the Justice League for, those of us who, I'm not a DC fan or a Marvel fan per se. I like both. We all grew up with Batman. You know, we all grew up with Superman, and we grew up with the Marvel characters, but we really didn't get movie iterations of the Marvel characters until the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And so Marvel has had a very well done strategy, and they've created basically a movie universe that's like the comic books, but you have all these continuing threads. DC didn't do that for the longest time, and they sort of have sort of stumbled in the process of getting there. So there's a lot riding on Justice League. They've definitely built up a lot of goodwill again with Wonder Woman, and this trailer, I will say I like this trailer. I like the there's some impressive looking shots in this trailer, and obviously we're dealing with the Justice League. The villain is Steppenwolf, which is, for those who know the DC universe, he's one of Darkseid's, who's like probably the biggest villain in the DC universe. He's one of like sort of Darkseid's lieutenants, and he's come to Earth, and if you read Justice League in the comics, when they face off on stuff, it's always stuff that the world is in jeopardy, and this is what we're getting. And
is there go ahead.
We're for the first time, we're getting Aquaman. We're getting a movie version of the Flash. We're getting Cyborg, who maybe not long time traditional Justice League, but he's definitely been a, more or less Teen Titans and more straight up superhero in the DC universe for a while now. So
what's the latest on the standalone Affleck Batman movie?
I don't know. This is once again Warner Brothers and DC's issue, is like they had this idea to finally have a DC movie universe, and then they've sort of almost decided to throw that out the window and have these standalone movies that apparently have no ties to the entire extended universe. And
yeah,
it's like, make up your mind. It's like, I realize you don't want to do exactly what Marvel's doing, but I hate to tell you, it's like what Marvel's doing works.
Even
though from time to time, Marvel's biggest issue has been villains. Marvel doesn't have some of the best villains. That's one thing DC has always had over Marvel, is they have some of the most iconic villains of the comic books.
Joker and Lex Luthor.
I mean, most of Batman's rogue gallery, most of Superman's, their villains are a lot stronger. And also, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, doesn't get to use, certain villains. Like they can't use the entire X-Men villains or the Fantastic Four villains. So they're sort of limited in what their villains are. But I really hope this movie is good. I mean, we've all, dreamed of a Justice League movie, and so I really hope they pull it off.
And kind of going back to the release before Star Wars, Justice League comes out when? Like mid-November?
Justice League, I think, is the weekend before Thanksgiving. Because it's the first weekend will be Thor Ragnarok, the first weekend, which I'm excited for, too. I never thought I'd say I'd be super excited for a Thor movie, but that movie looks like it's going to be amazing. Which is what Marvel finally realized with the standalone movies, is they need to have some of the other heroes in those movies. Cause I mean, it makes no sense if there's something happening that, may cause the destruction of the universe. Why would Thor be doing it all by himself?
Yeah. I've noticed that in the recent Marvel films, that they've kind of overlapped the universes more.
Well, yeah, I mean, Captain America: Civil War was basically another Avengers film.
Yep.
Even though they didn't call it an Avengers movie, it was pretty much another Avengers movie.
So that comes out mid-November, and then about a month later, there's a little movie called The Last Jedi that comes out. And
yeah, a little small independent film.
Yeah, by Lucasfilm.
I will say, I the first time I watched that trailer last night, my reaction at the end was literally, holy bleep.
I think it was a lot of people's reaction.
I mean, that trailer visually already looks better than The Force Awakens. I mean, there are some stunning shots in that trailer.
I thought that too. I was watching the trailer and I was like, I don't know what it is about this trailer, but it just looks, I couldn't put a word on it. I guess pretty is the word. It just looks visually, like you said, it looks better than The Force Awakens visually.
It does. And I mean, you know, we're 2 years away from when The Force Awakens came out, and I still love the movie. I still like the movie. But it definitely, they didn't take as many chances as they should have with that movie. They played it a little too safe.
It was very cliche and what's the word? I mean,
it was just safe.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put it. Is
and albeit they had a lot, you know, they had a lot of heavy lifting to do in that movie.
Yeah.
They had to, you know, bring back old characters, introduce new characters who, and I will say that is where that movie succeeded better than anything else, because by the time you get to the battle between, you know, between Finn and Kylo Ren and Rey in that forest, when that moment when that lightsaber is in the snow and it starts moving and then it flies into Rey's hand, I mean, I won't forget that. That theater went nuts.
Yeah.
Opening night.
Yep.
So I mean, they succeeded in making everyone like and fall in love with those characters and you know, despise Kylo Ren, because I mean,
the whole
he killed one of the most popular characters in Star Wars. So.
Or so you think. No, he's dead.
No, he's gone. But speaking of that, getting back to the trailer,
back to Last Jedi.
Spoiler alert. As shocking as some of the things in that trailer, I think there's a lot of misdirection going on in that trailer.
I think so, too. I was reading people's comments on Twitter and Facebook, and the editing is done really well, especially a lot of the stuff that leads you to believe that Rey is, you know, between Luke saying he's scared of seeing that much power again with Rey. Mm-hmm. And just the way it was edited was really deceiving, in my opinion, to lead people to think that Rey is going to join the dark side and she's going to be this evil, which, hey, it could happen. I'm not saying it's not going to.
Yeah, and well, the question is, like, the really brief flash we saw of Snoke, you know, of Supreme Leader Snoke torturing her, was that real or was that her having a nightmare?
Yeah,
because we had those moments in Force Awakens where she basically had sort of like Force vision / nightmares, of things, and does that really happen? You know, there's a few other things. You know, when Luke talks about fearing, you know, that kind of power.
Yeah,
fear leads to the dark side.
Yeah,
so. You know, and then that, and also seeing what is definitely a damaged and broken Luke Skywalker. That's something we've never seen before.
Yeah, he's looking a little rough.
And, you know, we saw some flashes of, you know, what happened at the Jedi Temple. And, you know, based on one shot in the trailer, it looks like not only did Kylo Ren and, you know, whatever the Knights of Ren are. No one's ever explained that one yet. Not only did he slaughter all the Jedi students, he tried to kill his uncle.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting little reveal, and I'm hoping we're finally going to, you know, get the answer of what happened.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a book about the Knights of Ren or something?
That's a good question.
I could have sworn I had, because I was obsessed with Kylo Ren when The Force Awakens came out, and I was looking up more about the Knights of Ren, and I think I stumbled upon a book. I could be wrong, but yeah, I hope we definitely learn more about his side and the Knights of Ren, and that would be something really interesting to learn more
it's,
about.
It's that, and then of course, you know, whether editing is involved with the whole thing of when obviously the First Order is attacking the Resistance, and he obviously, you know, goes after the ship that has his mother on it.
He ain't gonna shoot his mommy. He loves her.
Yeah, there was a hesitation there, and then the editing of that trailer too also makes you think is he questioning what he did now?
Yeah.
I personally think for this series, there's no redemption for Kylo Ren.
Yeah.
There's no redemption. You killed your father. And also you went even further than your grandfather did, and you were complicit in murdering an entire system.
Yeah.
Not just a planet, an entire system of planets.
Yeah.
So I mean, his the blood on his hands is a lot, and I just don't see a redemption arc. And I think, you know, there's the whole thing with The Last Jedi. There's been stories before in what used to be the extended universe about Force users who aren't dark or light, they're just use the Force, and
yeah,
maybe that is what Rey is.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about that Rey isn't going to be, she isn't going to the dark side, and she's not going to be a Jedi. She's that happy medium in the middle.
Because when she fought when she fought Kylo Ren, she fought him with anger.
Yeah, there was a lot of anger, and you could see it in her when she's swinging that lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that she's very powerful, but it makes you question now, like, who put Rey on Jakku? Because the way that trailer's edited, it doesn't seem like it was Luke who left her there.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is her parents.
Yeah,
it's parents.
Yeah, who hid her there? So that makes it, you know, that sort of throws, at least based on that trailer, throws the idea of that Luke hid her there. So we will find out in 2 months.
And then all the other interesting things in the trailer, such as, of course, the Porg. Everybody flipped over the Porg, and I noticed a lot of pictures on social media of that ice-covered fox creature. Did you see that?
Yeah, I think that's another one of those things that you're gonna see on the screen for like a few seconds.
Yeah, I was surprised. Everybody was like, even including my wife, she was like, "Oh my gosh, what is that thing? It's so cool looking."
It's another one of those characters you're going to see on screen for a few seconds that, you know.
And I am still confused as to why there's an AT-AT walker in the Star Wars ride going into Galaxy's Edge and not these awesome new gorilla-looking, I forgot what they're called. But
yeah,
you see them in The Last Jedi. They walk like a gorilla. They are so cool looking.
Yeah, we'll find out in late 2019.
Yeah. So, anyways, so that's some of the fun, exciting stuff going on in pop culture, Star Wars trailers, Justice League trailers. Let's get on to some theme park stuff. And finally, I've been through, on the last episode, I had not been through all of the haunted houses yet at Halloween Horror Nights. I have now, and I should probably pull up my rankings here. I have them here. I should have had this with me ready to go, but I don't. So bear with me a second. But I finally went through all the haunted houses, and...
And you saw Academy of Villains?
Yep, I saw Academy of Villains.
You just haven't seen Bill and Ted.
I know, I fail on that part.
Well,
last year,
next podcast, we will look back at 26 years of Bill and Ted, and so by then, he will have seen Bill and Ted, which unfortunately, he will have seen the new version of the Bill and Ted show, which has had a few changes from the original version this year.
Have you seen that yet? I can't remember.
Yes, I have seen it.
Briefly touch on that, because that's kind of interesting. After the Las Vegas shooting, they made some changes to the show.
Yeah, well, the show originally took place at a festival. It was sort of called the I can't remember everything off the top of my head, but sort of the Coachella Comic-Con Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah.
So they sort of dropped that from the show. Now it's just Bill and Ted are performing, and they sort of dropped some of the rest of the sort of festival jokes, because there was a few of them, and just concentrated on now death is going to kill Bill and Ted if they don't prove that, you know, pop culture is worth saving. So they changed a few things, and, you know, I didn't see the first two nights. I believe the first two nights I've heard were a little rough, because obviously they were getting used to the different some slight changes in the show, but by the time I saw it, I think were hitting on all cylinders again. So we'll talk more about, you know, one of my favorite things about Halloween Horror Nights, and we'll talk more, look back at the 26 years of Bill and Ted on the next podcast.
Yeah, because I've been going since Halloween Horror Nights 5, so I've seen decades of Bill and Ted.
Yeah.
So, okay, I got my rankings here, and I compared them to a lot of other people's, and it's pretty similar. A lot of people disagreed with me with my rank on The Shining, but I went through The Shining, and I was behind a group, and I pretty much missed everything. And I've heard with that house, if you don't get it timed just right, it kind of ruins it. So, but my rankings as of last week were, I'll start from the bottom and go to the top. Saw, Evil Dead number 8, 7, Hive, 6 is Blumhouse, 5 is The Fallen, 4, Shining, 3, American Horror Story, 2 is Dead Waters, and number 1 is Scarecrow. So that is my list as of last week of the Halloween Horror Nights 27 haunted houses. Every Scarecrow run I've been through just blew me away. I love that house. Nothing's been able to knock it down for me. Dead Waters, I think if that house was a little bit longer, it would have a potential to, but it's a fantastic house. I mean, just the facade with the ferry boat and the amount of ghillie suit jumpers, zombies. I love that house.
That one, the facade on that is one of the best ones I've ever seen them do. It's so impressive.
I've tried to go back as far as I can remember. Like I said, I've been going to Halloween Horror Nights since number 5. And you come around that corner and you see that boat facade, and it's impressive. But like I said, the house is, unfortunately, it's a little short, but for what it is, it's a really impressive house. And of course, American Horror Story is the Uber maze. It's gigantic. I haven't personally seen what seasons is it based upon?
It is Roanoke Asylum. And Oh, why am I going blank? Coven.
Yeah, that's it. I haven't seen any of it. I just don't have the time to watch these shows. But for what it is, I enjoyed The House. That's why it's number three on my list. It was pretty impressive, and I believe that's why it always has the longest wait. I already touched on The Shining. Like I said, with that house, I missed a lot of the scares because I was following a group of like five or six people, and I was pretty much observing all the scares happening in front of me. I had a few good moments in the hedge maze towards the end. But other than that, I missed a lot. So I'm hoping to get back through that one again.
Yeah, I think that house definitely really evokes the feel of the movie.
And just the other day, you had a briefly mention you had a solo run through.
I got to go through the house by myself, which was definitely very eerie. And you know, I've had that happen a few times over the years, but it's usually at the end of the night. Like if on a really slow night, you know, you can sometimes be lucky if you like the last 10 minutes, you can end up going through a house either virtually by yourself or literally by yourself. And it was definitely creepier, and I definitely got a little extra attention from the scare actors because since it was only me, they were literally like got right in my
all
face.
All focused on you.
Yeah, so it was definitely creepier. Definitely a creepier vibe when you're walking through there by yourself.
I'd like to get that because I love The Shining, and unfortunately the first run I had through there was kind of ruined. So, and then number five, The Fallen. That house, I put it in the middle because every time I've been through that house, I haven't been unimpressed and I haven't been impressed. It's just a cool house. I've enjoyed it the few times I've been through it.
Yeah, I mean it's a cool house. We've seen houses before with the sort of hellish, like, you know, feel or landscape to it. So
yep.
It definitely, you know, it definitely has that feel of something you've seen before. It's got some cool scares in it.
Yeah, and this one has they've used it before, the bungee jumper guys that come down from the ceiling. And
yeah, you got a bungee jumper guy, you've got someone who's above you.
Yeah, lots so of... And what I didn't... The only thing I didn't understand about that house is the initial description is like the battle of good versus evil. I was like, I see no good in that house. I see nothing but...
Well, that's my thing is like the facade you're walking through, it's like, was this a church that's been like, you know, taken over by... Because it sort of looks sort of like a church or a cathedral.
Yeah, like some kind of gothic cathedral.
Yeah, so it's like, is it that's what it was, and it's been infested with evil? You know, that doesn't really come across. It's sort of what comes across to me, but I mean, I guess we're sort of supposed to like come to our own conclusion about what it really is.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I put it in the middle. And it just every time I've gone through that house, I've enjoyed it. It's a cool house, so I was like, okay, I'll put you in the middle. And six, Blumhouse. Apparently on Twitter, I've seen a lot of other theme park blogs. They've given, I think it's Cast A, really puts on a good show. And they've like ranked it like their number one. And I put it at number six just because it kind of falls under the same meaning as The Fallen for me. It's a fun house. I've been through it, I think, twice. And both times, the purge section was the only section I really didn't enjoy. The scene where the dining room table and the people dead at the table. And I enjoy The Purge as a scare zone, but the house in the Blumhouse, I just didn't get it. But Insidious and... What's the other... Insidious and...
Sinister?
Sinister.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with that house is like, okay, we're in Sinister real quick. Then we're in Purge real quick. And then we're in Insidious, and we've been in an Insidious before.
Yeah.
Like I believe it was Halloween Horror Nights 25. So it's part of that house sort of feels recycled to me. So it's to me, it's you know, it's okay. Like I said, if you have what a lot of people consider the good cast, because we went through, I went through the other night, and I liked it better.
Yeah.
But to me, it was just okay.
Yeah. And then, my bottom three, The Hive. I've seen that ranked on other people's lists higher. I can't get into that house. The whole vampire, it's kind of like the Vamp 55 scare zone last year. It's kind of got that same vibe to it. I don't know.
See, but I liked the Vamp 55 scare zone last year.
Yeah, I really liked what that came out to be. They changed it.
And I believe someone told me if you look close in The Hive, there's some Vamp 55 pom poms in one of the rooms.
I believe it, because isn't it around the same time frame?
No, it takes place in the 1980s.
That's right, in the 80s, and the Vamp 55 was obviously 55.
Yeah, in Ohio. So, you know, and it's the Nosferatu type vampires. So it's, you know, with the creepy, with the bald heads and pointy ears, and
that's the other thing is I do not find the vampires that are in there scary when they jump out at you. I'm like, no.
I mean, I like the design of the house, but scare factor, it's not really scary to me.
Yeah, I haven't been startled, scared in that house once. So, and then Evil Dead. It's obviously the fun, silly maze because it's Ash versus Evil Dead. And, you know, I can't rank that house any higher than what it is just because it's
one, if you haven't seen the show, it's not going to be, I think, as good to you. I rank it a little bit higher because I've watched the show.
Yeah, so. I think that's the other reason why I haven't seen any. I'm familiar with the Evil Dead movies, but I have not watched the Ash versus Evil Dead show, so that's unfortunately another one.
Yeah, in the maze you do end back at the cabin.
Yeah,
so I mean there is that aspect that some people, if they've seen the Evil Dead movies, they will know that. But yeah, it really pays off for people who've seen the show.
It's funny. I mean, there's some scenes where even if I haven't seen the show, I get a good chuckle with some of the scenes that play out in the house, but I haven't seen the show, so I may not get a lot of the things that go on in there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the bottom of my list and at the bottom of a lot of people's lists is Saw.
Oh, yeah.
And I walked through that house, and I was like, it felt like I was, it almost felt like I was walking through a Saw museum almost. That's the best way I can explain it. I was really unimpressed with that house.
No, I mean, I've never really cared for those movies, and the house is it's you know, if you can hit the scares, the timing on the scares, it's not too bad, but it's just okay.
There were a few moments with the, I don't know what they're called, but the pig head guys.
Yeah.
There were a few moments that could have provided a good scare for me, but it didn't catch me. But they were good set up scares, if that makes sense. Like, the way the scare was represented was done really well. But other than that, I walked through that house that night we went through it, and I was like, yeah. So that's why Saw is at the bottom of my list. But that isn't the first time Saw was at Horror Nights as a house. It was 2000. I'm going to get this wrong. When it was in the Jaws queue.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was... Obviously, it was pre-Potter or Diagon Alley because it was in the Jaws queue. I want to say 2009. I may be wrong, though. That was the first time they had a Saw house.
Yes, it was 2009.
Okay, cool. And I actually remember that house, and I that house I actually enjoyed, because I think it was based on the more recent Saw films, which I actually enjoyed. The longer they went with them, the more they made, I got less interested. But the first few Saw films, I could actually sit down and watch. But when they got into, what number are they on now with the Saw films? 4, 5, 6?
I think the next one is called Jigsaw or something.
Yeah, this one's called Jigsaw that comes out. And but anyways, that's my Horror Nights list. And then we discussed the Scare Zones already. And like Barry said, I haven't seen Bill and Ted. Academy of Villains, that show, they finally got their better stage up after Hurricane Irma. Unfortunately, it wasn't the big stage they had set up pre-Irma. And did we get that up on our YouTube channel? I know you...
We haven't gotten... We got the original, what we called the Irma show that was on the temporary
stage.
That's
what we got up there.
We'll be getting what's called the Irma show. They're basically calling the Irma show. So Afterlife is not happening this year.
Yeah.
Due to what happened with Irma, because it damaged the lighting rig.
Yep.
for that stage, and Universal just decided to come up with a temporary lighting rig, and they put up video screens and
it looks a little bit better.
Lights. It looks better. But they're still doing a shortened show. It's longer than the original temp show they created, and they're basically calling it the Irma show.
Yeah.
But I expect Academy of Villains to be back next year, and maybe we will see whatever Afterlife was supposed to be next year.
Yeah, it just sucks that Hurricane Irma came through and put a shellacking on the stage.
But especially because, you know, one rumor I have heard is... You know, we talk about the end of Bill and Ted this year. One rumor I have heard is there will be no replacement for Bill and Ted, and that Academy of Villains will be the only show.
Yeah,
next year
it'll be interesting.
Which to me would be a very disappointment, because Halloween Horror Nights on many nights already has an issue with crowds, and without having a show where people sit down for, you know, a half an hour, especially, I think that Fear Factor place holds either it's somewhere in between 500 to 1,000 people. Without having that extra show to soak up the crowds, I don't know if that event's going to be the same, because you already got people like Pat basically laying on sidewalks halfway through the night.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. What happens next year with Bill and Ted ending and all the rumors and speculation of what's going on. So we'll see what happens. But moving on from Halloween Horror Nights, last night, actually, me and Barry got to visit another haunted attraction north of Tampa in Dade City, and it's called Screamageddon. And they have a variety of haunted houses, haunted trails. They have a hayride. So we got invited down there to check it out, and we got front of the line passes. Thanks to Screamageddon for hooking us up with those and inviting us down to check it out. And we'll briefly discuss what they had to offer there. And go ahead.
I thought it was a good mix of pretty much about every type of haunt you could have out there, because there was 5 total, and like you said, there's a hayride.
Mm-hmm.
There's an elaborate haunt trail that's through the woods. You had that type of haunt. You had a haunt that maze that was indoors and outdoors.
Yep.
you had a 3D maze, and then you had a straight up regular indoor maze, which we will probably get to that one last, because that was definitely the highlight of the evening.
Yeah. So first we did the Infected Ground Zero, which I believe was the new one this year. So
yes,
we wanted to get that one done and out of the way. And it's your zombie apocalypse haunted house. It begins with like medical tents and people, dead bodies all over the place, and it progressively gets more, it's very Walking Dead-ish.
Yes.
There's, you know, like I said, it starts off with you walking through some medical tents and people are dying, and eventually it's just zombies in every section of the, in every phase of the haunted, I can't really call these haunted houses because they're more or less like walkthrough experiences. And this one was outdoors, like I said, with the exception of some tents and
an indoor section through a house.
Yep, there was an indoor section that went through like this house facade. And then the ending was like a maze made up of plastic. It was like a, what would you call that stuff? But there was a maze at the end. Yeah, it was almost like tarps.
And there was no direction of where you were supposed to go.
Yeah, and I'll mention it now. Two of these haunted houses, this one, the zombie one, and the one we'll talk about later, the Blackpool Prison, they have this option of you putting on a glow necklace, like a, it's like a glow stick, but a necklace. And if you put that on, you basically give up all of your, what's the word I'm looking for?
Rights.
You give up all your rights. Yeah, that's the best way to put it. And the scare actors can physically grab you. They can put you in like really uncomfortable situations. They can separate you from your party. And we did it in the prison one. Unfortunately, we weren't able to go back, and you can opt out of it, or you can do it when you get up there. And we didn't do it on the zombie one, but I saw, we ran into some people that said, one guy said he got thrown in a body bag, and there's another section that you can be pulled off into where they, quote, shave your head, and it's like a barber chair, and this guy has like a fake razor, electric razor, and he's going bzzz, and he's shaving your head, but it's obviously fake. So there's all of these really cool alternative experiences if you put this glow necklace on. But the zombie one is interesting. I felt like I mentioned to you last night, it was really quiet. I think they needed to add, I mean, I get it why they don't do it. It's outdoors, electrical, but it was a really quiet, and I think they needed some kind of sound to really...
Yeah, the lack of audio was, I guess for some people it might be unnerving. For us, I think it lacked, it didn't really set a mood, and I think it sort of needed some sort of audio in the background to sort of set the tone.
Yeah,
of it.
I think we're so spoiled with Halloween Horror Nights and Hollow Scream and all these haunts that really audio is such a huge part of any haunted attraction. And a few of the ones at Screamageddon prove that, but this zombie one, it was just really quiet, and it made it more awkward for me than scary, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was cool. Some of the sets were really impressive. They had some really cool effects, some air pneumatic props that jumped out at you, and like Barry said, the tarp maze at the end was really disorienting because they don't give you any sort of inclination of which way to go, left, right, what have you. So I enjoyed that one. I think they could have done something better as far as audio, but I get it. Yeah. It's outdoors. You know, it was raining last night. I get it. And then what did we do next? We did
Deadwoods was up next.
Yeah,
and that's your traditional haunted trail through the woods.
Yeah, and this one is, it was really, the setting is perfect because it's literally this trail out in the woods, because this Screamageddon is literally out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, the drive there was about an hour and a half for me, and it's a drive out in the middle of nowhere, nothing but woods and forest, and so where this whole thing takes place is literally out in the middle of nowhere, and this the Deadwood is literally just a trail with certain areas that have buildings that you would walk through and encounter some scare actors. But in between, it's literally a dimly lit trail with like these little tea light candles, and they give you one glow stick. And the further back you got, I mean, Barry, you can attest, it got pretty dark back there.
It got very dark, and you're basically walking along a trail, and then you go through a couple of, basically, for lack of a better term, different houses along those trail.
Yeah.
And it was your typical hillbilly cannibal.
Yeah, that's
storyline.
That's kind of the vibe I got from it. Was there was one house you walk through, and there was like raccoon tails hanging from the ceiling, and it was a very a touch sense thing. You know, it really creeped you out. But I honestly thought the areas between those buildings was more creepy. Just being out in the pitch black woods, that seemed more terrifying to me than the little houses that they have set up along the trail. And then, of course, at the end, they have, I think it was two guys with chainsaws that come running at you in the pitch black woods, which I'm pretty immune to chainsaw guys, but for the the general public, that would be pretty terrifying. So I really liked Deadwood. It was just it was a natural setting. You're out in the woods, it's pitch black, you have no idea what's going on. It was pretty cool. I would like to see them do more with that, actually. There's so much they could do with that. And then after that, we went on the hayride.
Yeah, the cursed hayride, which the storyline, I guess, for that is residents of a town are cursed with immortality and have tried to die for years, but their attempts to reach the afterlife have been in vain. And in order to escape their never-ending torture, they must find another to take their place. So you're riding, basically pulled by a tractor, sitting in hay, and you basically hit a different bunch of scenes as you're going along with pretty elaborate sets.
There were all the way to the end, the finale scene, where you're pretty much in like this Wild West like city with like a general store and a bank and other buildings. All of the facades I was pretty impressed with.
Yeah, the facades before you get to the Wild West town, you actually would stop for basically a show scene in those. But the cool thing was when you got to the Wild West town is so big, actually, when you get to that part, you're actually slowly moving through the town.
Yeah.
As all this action occurs around you.
There's like this shootout going on, and people come out and start shooting at you and shooting across. And that's where there was a big explosion there, too, like a big fireball.
Yeah, one of the characters robs the bank and blows it up.
Yep. And
so it was impressive.
Go ahead.
It wasn't much scary, especially if you do go, try to sit in the back, because that's where you're going to get the most interaction. Because like after some of the show scenes, one or two of the characters from that show scene would follow along,
yep,
and try to scare people as we were moving along to the next show scene.
Yep, it was really neat. I'm always up for a good hayride, and this one with the elaborate sets and the actors and the special effects, and it actually takes place. We noticed there's a zip line park right next to the Screamageddon park, and the hayride actually goes under some of the zip lines. So if you look up in the trees, you'll be able to see some of these zip line courses. I thought that was pretty cool. And then after that, we did, I believe, the 3D house, right? Bedlam 3D.
Bedlam 3D. And it's your typical clown 3D house. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it's your typical 3D fun house. You put on the glasses, everything's neon paint. I mean, everything in this house was neon paint. Sometimes, like when Halloween Horror Nights does a 3D house, there's a break in it. But this was just some of the effects were really cool.
Yeah, there was definitely some cool effects and some disorienting effects that definitely tricked you.
I thought I didn't see it, but I heard you almost fell on your butt in the vortex tunnel.
Yeah, the vortex tunnel was pretty well done.
Yeah.
And there's one section too where you have the you're walking on the panels on the floor that can slide side to side. So it's, you know, it's got some of the disorienting type effects, and there was the wooden bridge too with the moving where the planks moved on you.
Yeah, that was really cool because the planks were painted neon, and you're not expecting them to move. And the 3D effect with the glasses and the bridge moving was pretty disorienting. So that house was fun. You know, again, not scary. It's your typical clown 3D neon paint fun house, haunted house. And then lastly, but definitely not least, we went through Blackpool Prison, which Barry can agree with me. This was our favorite. This was our favorite of the evening.
Hands down the favorite. Blackpool Prison is supposed to be a place where like truly horrible criminals were sent. And the prisoners have rioted, and they now have control of the prison. And you know, there's nowhere else for you to go. And you know, you're at the control of the inmates once you go in. You know, we went through it regularly, and even with the regular version, was very impressive.
Yeah, and again, this is
the interactive one.
Yeah, this is the other one where you can put like I said about the zombie. The zombie outbreak or infected ground zero, excuse me. This is the other one where you can put on one of these glow necklaces. And if the scare actors see that, which they do, they're actually physically, there's a warning sign out front. And, the sign actually, I have it right here. The sign says, "By wearing a glow necklace, you explicitly consent to being touched, grabbed, removed from your group, and forced to remain and agree to release this facility from any and all claims of injury, death, or other physical or mental harm as a result of your decision." So there you have it. They can, they're pretty much allowed to do what they want with you. And the thing with, like I said, with the zombie one, these two houses are designed for that. There's, especially in the prison one, there's hallways they can grab you and throw you in a prison cell, and there's like these really tight corridors where you have to crawl through to get out. Barry, you got thrown in like a, what was it, like a boiler room or something?
First I got thrown into a prison cell, and then I had to like crawl out through like a little tunnel. And then I got thrown into the boiler room, which they threw me into like a pitch black dark closet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden behind me, another scare actor like came right behind me and then kicked me out of there. And then, you know, I got thrown into another cell and then was forced to crawl through a little tunnel.
I lost track. I don't know how many cells I got thrown into. I think it was like three or four.
You got pinned up against a wall.
Yeah, I had two big guys like corner me up against the wall, and I tried to run away, and they would physically grab me by my arm and like throw me back up against the wall. And I got the other thing that was pretty hilarious, which is my true nightmare, was this dentist scene. This guy who I'm guessing is an inmate pretending to be a dentist. He physically grabbed me, threw me in this like dentist chair, and he had like this metal bucket in his hand and like these pliers, and he was like in my face, like pretending like he was about to like rip my teeth out. And it was insane. And on the flip side, it was so much fun. I was laughing the whole way through. I couldn't help but laugh.
Oh yeah, no, it was one of the, it was definitely the highlight of the night and one of the better haunts I've been through.
Yeah, throwing that the glow necklace on really gives you a different experience versus just walking through. And like you said, the first run we did through the prison one, just without the necklace, was pretty intense, and I really liked it then. But then we did the run through with the glow necklace and took it up a whole another notch. So there's really, and then, you know, in the middle there's food and souvenir stands, and there's scare actors walking around. There's not really any scare zones.
Yeah, what they call their monster midway. There's scare actors walking around, plenty of food. There's even beer and craft beer.
Yep.
They had an impressive lineup of t-shirts.
Yeah.
They had games you could play, including zombie paintball.
Yep. They had the zombie paintball.
It's definitely a place, especially I'm assuming if you went on a Friday or Saturday night, where it would be, you would be making a night of it to go there. I mean, you would need, on even if we didn't have the VIP pass we had that night, you would probably need a good two or three. Even on the Monday night, you could need probably a good 2 or 3 hours to experience.
And that's
the whole
all
thing.
I think they're open. I can't remember what their hours are, but on the weeknights they're only open from 8 to 11, so that gives you 3 hours, which you can do everything in 3 hours. I mean, when we were there on a Monday night and the crowds were fairly manageable, the new one, the zombie house, had the longest line all night.
Yeah, the weeknights, basically, they're open every night now, and basically Sunday through Thursdays they're open 7:30 to 11 p.m., and then Friday and Saturdays they are open 7:30 to 1 a.m., and they will be going every day through Halloween, and then they will be doing Friday and Saturday, November 3rd and 4th, 7:30 to midnight. So it's believe this is their third year, and it seems to be doing pretty well.
Yeah, I talked with the general manager for a few minutes, and he kind of gave me a history of the event, and the owner of Screamageddon, he actually moved down here to Florida and was looking for a spot to build, and he picked this area, which, like I said, if you live in Orlando, it's about an hour and a half drive. Once you get off I-4, prepare for a boring drive, but once you get there, yeah, you won't be disappointed. I really enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see what they have next year.
If you're a fan of Halloween haunts, this is definitely one of the best ones in the area, and it's one of the only ones I know of outside of a Petrified Forest in Altamont Springs, which has two trails. I mean, this thing has 5 different haunted attractions.
Yeah.
And so you can, like you said, you can spend a good 3 hours there.
And I really don't think they don't have to compete with Halloween Horror Nights or Hollow Scream would be closer to them as far as time and distance. But like I said, this place is out in the middle of nowhere, about, I would say, half an hour, 45 minutes north of Tampa. So they really don't have any serious competition as far as what they have to compete against. I mean, yeah, they have Halloween Horror Nights and Hollow Scream to compete against, but they seem to be doing just fine with them being with this being year 3 for them. So definitely get down there if you can, check it out.
Tickets start as low as $21.95 on some nights, and then as high as, I believe, $38.95. This is for your standard regular ticket. The VIP pass is extra,
which is what we had. We had the VIP passes, and it gives you the they call it Fast Pass. Yes, they call it Fast Pass.
Yeah, and you can buy your tickets online at www.screamageddon.com. And I would recommend buying them in advance because the tickets are $5 more at the box office. So I would definitely, you save some money if you buy them in advance.
Yep. And I posted some pictures on Twitter at Thrill Geek of just some of the areas. My cell signal was, like I said, this place is out in the middle of nowhere. So my cell signal last night was few and far between. So I tried to post a few pictures. And I think I took some video that I'll try and get up also. But really cool experience. If you can take the hour and a half drive, head out there, do it, spend a night, go out there and do it. We really enjoyed it. So thanks again for having us out there, Screamageddon, and hopefully we'll see you guys again next year. So moving on from haunt spooky stuff, Barry was
family friendly.
Yeah. Let's go to something a little more family friendly and talk about Epcot's 35th anniversary.
I was there last Sunday, October 1st, 35 years. It basically, we had a nice little ceremony at the Fountain of Nations that morning. It poured rain, and then luckily Disney Magic came and it stopped rain just in time.
I heard I watched your video and they played my Tapestry of Nations music.
Oh yeah.
I was like, I missed that.
They played Tapestry of Nations. It opened with Mariachi Cobra. I can never say their name right. They opened up the show because they, along with Voices of Liberty, are two of the acts that have been there for 35 years, and I believe a couple of the guys in the mariachi band have been there since the beginning. They did that. They had a couple of different speakers, including the president of Walt Disney World, and they ended it with Voices of Liberty doing a medley of some of the classic Epcot songs. So it was a nice little ceremony. You can go on our YouTube channel and check it out. The other big thing was merchandise, there's special 35th anniversary merchandise that will be available all throughout the year, including some stuff that more stuff has popped up since the actual 35th, the day of the 35th. I think they just released a Tervis tumbler, which will make, some people out there happy.
So I know one guy.
Yeah, there's plenty of regular 35th anniversary merchandise, including even World Showcase 35th anniversary merchandise. There was special I Was There merchandise that was only available that day, and a lot of people waited in a long line for that, whereas I came back that evening and waited about 10-15 minutes.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter you actually came back later in the day, and even the – wasn't the – Figment pop vinyl line fairly short too.
I don't know if I didn't check later in the day if they still had any Figment pops left. When I left midday, that line was insane at Mouse Gear for the Figment pops and the Magic Bands, the limited edition Magic Band, which I knew they ran out of the limited edition Magic Band. The Figment pops you can buy on the Shop Disney app. So like all those, eBay people, I'm sure they suckered a few people, but, Disney did a good job this year with limited edition merchandise with making enough, because for the most part, the only thing, by the time I went back through the pop-up shop that night, the only thing they really ran out of was like, I believe the hat. And like one other thing.
Was that like
they still had
trucker hat or whatever that was?
Yeah, the trucker hat.
That looks pretty
they
cool.
They still had the pins, they still had a couple of ornaments left. They still had, I think most of the different designs of the t-shirts. I got a t-shirt and one of the pins.
Yeah.
So, and some of that stuff actually ended up in Mouse Gear the next day because they didn't sell all of it. So, but they eventually, it was all gone. So, I mean, I give kudos to Disney for actually making enough, for the most part, making enough merchandise that if you were there and you wanted it, you could get
that's
it.
That's good.
So that's they've definitely and they should, because you know they should be try to thwart the people who try to put this stuff up on eBay.
Yeah,
because
you got the eBay people and everybody else.
And they even made two of the shirts were available on the Shop Disney Parks app that morning. So yeah. They did try to make it so you could at least get some of that merchandise. And then the other big thing was the fireworks finale, which I wasn't there for the 30th. I was there for the 25th. But apparently it was sort of the same tag that they had for the 30th, and it was good. It used some of the classic Epcot music, and they definitely had some unique fireworks, and we got the usual crazy, you know, last 30 seconds and 300 shells go off all at once.
Yeah, the finale is usually pretty crazy with some.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was definitely impressive, and you know it was a nice, you know, Disney, you know, doesn't have to acknowledge, you know, these anniversaries. You know, they don't really, you know, for a while there they weren't doing them at these 5-year anniversaries. They weren't acknowledging them at all.
Yeah.
So it's nice since the 25th that they've been doing something every 5 years. You know, albeit a lot of the more interesting stuff this year, you had to, you know, do the D23 event. You know, that's maybe my only disappointing thing is some of the stuff that was offered to all guests in past at the 25th and the 30th now is basically something you have to pay extra for.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to go to like some of these, you know, panels where I think this year they had like Tony Baxter and some of the other past Imagineers talking about Epcot, where like the 25th they just had, you know, you just had to wait for to I got to see Marty Sklar, the late great Marty Sklar, talk about Epcot, and I didn't have to pay extra for that.
Yeah,
so it was a fun day, and you know, it's always nice. You know, Epcot's always been sort of even though it's not what it once was, it's always had a sort of special place, because you know it's the park that sort of you know really liked as a young person, because it definitely, you know.
Yeah, I remember.
Really sparked my imagination, and you know,
I
used to have that hopeful future message that park still sort of has.
Yeah, I always remember my early field trips to Epcot in the fourth grade, and I think I went in like the sixth grade, and those days of Epcot, I was glad I was able to experience it, because to see all these changes coming with the Guardians of the Galaxy roller coaster and whatever, the Ratatouille ride, I'm excited for the changes because the park needs it. But like you said, the park always has this unique vibe to it that I don't think will ever go away.
Yeah, I mean, and the biggest issue, you know, the longtime fans have had is like the park had some of the greatest rides ever created.
Yeah.
AKA the original Imagination ride and World of Motion. And instead of adding on, we lost those rides, and it's still to this day, it's like a shame that, you know, Spaceship Earth's the only one left now. It's the only, you know, that park used to have like more animatronics than I believe any other Disney park on the face of the earth.
And I'm pretty sure we can all say that Mission Space was a what's the word? How am I going to say this without aggravating people? Mission Space and Horizons. I think there would be more people happy if Horizons was here instead of Mission Space. If I could say that, which I think a lot of people would agree with me. Because
yeah, well, no different than Test Track should have been something that was added next to World of Motion,
yep.
Not something that replaced World of Motion.
Yeah, and then it sucks that
Always. And then we could all go into what's the well-known history of what happened to the Imagination Ride and how
that's a whole other podcast.
It's a whole other podcast about how certain people in management at the time basically sabotaged that ride.
Yep.
And which, you know, that's why some of us, you know, as much as we still love the park, it sometimes saddens us that, you know, we lost some of the greatest attractions ever created.
I'm excited for the future with all these new things coming. Guardians, Ratatouille. It's nice.
There's more things that are coming to that park that have not been announced.
Yeah, I've heard the rumors and stuff. So I'm just glad to see Epcot finally getting some attention that it needs.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, 5 years. 5 years from now, allegedly 5 years from now, the front of that park is going to, especially the middle, the spine of the that of Future World is going to look a lot different.
Yeah.
Moving on. Speaking of family friendly, we sort of skipped over. We've both been to SeaWorld Halloween Spooktacular.
Yeah, let's go back. I'm going through my show notes here, and I skipped over. Perhaps one of my, because you know I have three kids, so going to Shamu's, or
It's no longer called Shamu's.
I'm sorry. It's just Halloween Spooktacular.
He's still on the bag.
Yeah. And so going to Halloween Spooktacular at SeaWorld is always a fun time for me with my kids. And even you, who you don't have kids, you have a good time. So
it is a family friendly Halloween event. That is a good time for adults and kids. I mean, you have all these characters that you can take pictures with.
There's a ton.
A ton of characters. Some of them are just there to take pictures, but some of them even put on like little shows. And yep. you have
the school of fish.
So much candy. Yep.
And
it's good candy, and you could literally go back and forth all you want through the candy trail.
Yeah,
there
one
and,
of the
and walk out with a ton of candy.
When we were there on Sunday, we got to the end of the run over there by the pretzel kitchen, and yeah, one of the witches like that greets you as you're coming in. She's like, "Oh, are you guys gonna turn around and go again for more candy?" I was like, "I like your thinking."
And the big deal candy this year is the Oreo bars.
Yeah, the king sized Oreo bar things. When they were handing those out, I was like, "Oh wow."
Yeah, and they're even though I don't know if it's your day, they're sort of like, you know, try to keep it that you're only allowed to get one of those a day.
I think they kept it to one.
They check people's, they literally will look in your bag to see if you already have one.
I mean, they're like full king size candy bars, so I can see why. Yeah.
Same thing, the Swedish fish this year is a full size bag of Swedish fish.
We must have missed the Swedish fish.
Swedish fish. I've noticed some spots like the Oreo bars. Sometimes some of the candies get rotated in and out. Obviously, because it seems like the Oreo bars, they'll run out of them at a certain point.
Yeah,
and they'll throw something else into that spot for a little bit, and then they'll get, you know, more Oreo bars back out.
Because we did the whole trail. I mean, we did the whole waterfront area, all the way over by Shamu's Happy Harbor, and all the way that whole area. So my favorite, like I told you, are those fruit strips that you get. Oh, I love those things. Oh, yeah. Those things are so good.
Yeah, those are good, and that's the candy that's, it's not really candy, but that's the one thing that's not too bad for you.
Somebody gave me crap on Twitter about that. They're like, that's not candy. I was like, you get what I'm saying.
And I believe there's some people who have allergies. There are some additional options like for people who have allergies,
to
if you ask them.
Peanuts or whatnot, if you're allergic to peanuts or what have you.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a well-done event. I mean, they also have the
Sesame Street show.
The Sesame Street show, which that's the one little flaw with the event, because it is hard to get in. You have got to get
it fills
early.
Up quick. Yeah.
It fills up very. It always fills up before showtime because they only do usually like four shows a day. You know, the only thing I miss out from past, Halloween spooktaculars is they don't. There used to be a special Halloween Shamu show years ago.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember what it was called.
I think it was called the Spirit of Shamu or something like that. But that was ten years ago. But it's a fun event for families or adults, and there's kids in costumes. There's even plenty of teenagers and adults in costumes.
Yeah, everybody can get dressed up, and they have the rule. I think it's kids under 12 or 13 can't wear a mask, or over. Kids over 12 or 13 can't wear a mask.
Can't wear a mask. But it's a fun event, and it's included with your park admission, unlike Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party.
Yep. And it's definitely a fun time every year with me and my kids and my wife. We always go out there and do some trick-or-treating and hang out and have some fun. So, all right, moving on. And probably the most recent news is the closing of Terminator 2 3D at Universal. You were there for the final show, and we got some really good video up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thrillgeek, of the final standing ovation, I guess you could say. So, Barry, you want to touch on that really quick?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to attend the final show. And one of the people I attended the final show with, one of my friends, has played Kimberly for 10 years. So it was really cool to be there for the final show with her. It was a fun. First of all, it was the first time I've ever been in the outdoor queue, which I did not know they even had an outdoor queue.
There was a lot of people on Twitter that were like, Terminator has an outdoor queue.
Yeah, I had never been in the outdoor queue, so we actually had to wait out in the outdoor queue for a little bit, but got into the final show. We got into the pre-show, and it was a one of the best pre-shows I've ever been to, because the crowd was excited. They were, cheering, saying super. Every time Kimberly said super, they were cheering.
That's awesome.
I'm according to a friend of mine, the two casts that were there for the final day were made up of some of the longtime cast team members who have done that show.
I heard there were some of the team members there had been there for, if not since the beginning, but for a really long time.
I think the two Terminators that worked the final day have been there since the beginning or close to the beginning, because one of the guys, and I've met him before, I believe Mark, it was actually his birthday, and actually the crowd sang happy birthday to him after the final show. So yeah, we went in there, and the crowd, I mean, I've never been to a Terminator show where the crowd was that pumped up.
Yeah.
So it was a fun experience, and apparently the final day, they let everybody film whatever they wanted.
Yeah, which, there were a lot of people on social media saying, thank you, Universal, for letting us film, lifting the no filming rule.
Yeah, they let everybody film, and everybody who did film, especially in the final show, were very respectful. No one was like holding, at least I saw, no one was like holding their phone or their camera way up in the air. We did shoot a lot of the final show, the pre-show, the walking into the theater, the start of the show, and of course the end of the show, and the ovation, standing ovation at the end. We hope to have that up on a special highlights video of the final show up on our YouTube channel soon. But it was really enjoyable, and like I said, I two of my best friends have been a part of that show for a long time. And so it, you know, it's bittersweet for them. I mean, obviously it's bittersweet for a lot of people who, you know, this was one of their regular gigs. But the show had really shown its age. I know, I mean, a few years ago they did give it a nice little update to the pre-show and definitely, you know, cleaned up the theater a little bit, but that screen had definitely,
yeah,
you know, has some wear and tear to it now. And you know, the show had sort of shown its age. At the time that thing debuted, that was the most impressive 4D, whatever you know, attraction I had ever seen.
Yeah,
it was.
I was lucky enough to be, because it opened up in 96, and yes, my first trip to Universal was probably sometime around there, and I was completely blown away by Terminator. When I
the 3D was, I mean, that T-1000. The 3D on that section of that part is, it was jaw dropping.
Yeah.
And I mean that, especially when they shoot the CO2 and it freezes, and that thing literally looked like it was hovering over you.
It almost made your forehead tingle.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was very impressive for its time, but 19 years, you know, it was a pretty long time for an attraction like that. And, you know, Universal, I think, realized that it was time to move on to something new, something that will be a Universal franchise.
Yeah.
But something that will still, from what we've heard, is going to be some type of stunt show, whether it's going to be a mixed media type thing, we will see. But we'll have to wait till 2019 for the debut of that.
Yep, 2019 is when Terminator's replacement will open.
But it was really fun to experience the final show, and especially experience, you know, with a friend of mine who was a part of the cast, and who, you know, some of the people in the cast I've met over the years, and, you know, got to see them take the final picture in front of the attraction of that, where it was. Not just current team members, but there was a lot of people who have been a part of that ride over the years that were there for that final show.
Yeah, that on our Twitter account, @ThrillGeek, you can see the photos of the whole crew posing out in front of the attraction, and a few other photos and videos that Barry posted on Twitter. And then, like we said, we'll do a compilation video and get that up on our YouTube channel.
As much change as that Studios Park has done, there, come 4 years from now, that place is going to be a completely different place.
I mean, with Nintendo coming,
crazy.
Now this Terminator's replacement.
And allegedly something's going to take Shrek's place.
Yeah, the Secret Life of Pets.
We'll have to wait and see. And allegedly something's going to go where the Fear Factor Theater is. We'll have to wait and see. I think a lot of people thought Universal was going to... I mean, albeit we do have, you know, the new Harry Potter attraction coming in 2019 in Hogsmeade, but a lot of people thought Universal was going to sort of... You let Disney have their thing with Star Wars and sort of like slow down for a little bit. And it looks like they've decided they're not going to slow down.
Yeah.
And they're going to, you know, we'll wait and see if we're actually, it's like, okay, you're going to open Star Wars Land. Well, we're going to 1-2.
They got that boy wizard.
New Harry Potter. And if it's the thing that, you know, the rumor for Ministry of Magic going where Fear Factor is, and not just the fact that it would be the Ministry of Magic, the fact that what would go in there would be something that would take place after Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, that it would be something new that J.K. Rowling has come up with.
Yeah, because everything...
That is very interesting.
Everything currently in the Wizarding World has taken place within the current films or the, you know, it's taken place in a film or a time frame in the film series.
I think Hogsmeade is supposed to be, I think, what, before the
Forbidden Journey is pretty much the
Hogsmeade, you know, basically took place during God, I can't believe I'm going blank on Harry Potter movie names. Before the God, what's her face? If Megadis,
Megan here.
Yeah. I can't believe I'm going blank on Harry Potter movies.
Sorcerer's Stone. And then there's, I'm even worse right now. I'm tired too, so that doesn't help.
Hogsmeade basically takes place around the time of Goblet of Fire, because you had Dragon Challenge and I guess Goblet of Fire, Order of Phoenix type era.
Sorcerer's Stone, Chamber of Secrets, Prisoner of Azkaban.
While Diagon Alley, and especially obviously Gringotts, takes place during the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, so this rumored Ministry of Magic attraction would be something that would not take place in the current film series, something completely new.
No, it allegedly would take place after Deathly Hallows.
So, but that's all speculation and rumors.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But like you said, the next 4 or 5 years are going to be really interesting with Nintendo and possibly more Potter. Well, we are getting more Potter, but over at Islands of Adventure with the Dragon Challenge replacement. And Universal, like you said, Universal's not slowing down. They're pumping out new things to new hotels.
Next time we'll be talking about something that dropped recently. But we'll save it for the next podcast.
Yep.
Another change is coming to the studio.
Yeah, another closure, but that's for next time. And I think that'll be a good way to wrap things up here. We went a little longer, but I've kind of told Barry and stuff that as long as we have content to talk about, we'll go as long as we need to. And we had plenty of content to talk about today. But thank you guys for listening. And I forgot to mention the t-shirts. We have Thrill Geek shirts now available. The first shipment, this website that I'm doing the t-shirts through, they do it in like bulks of like 3 or 4 days, and the first orders were processed yesterday, Monday, and the sale started over again today. So it's never ending. But they take orders for like a certain amount of days, and then they print the shirts and ship them out, and you can get them just by going to thrillgeek.com/shop. And there's different styles. I have 2 guys' shirts and a women's shirt on there. And they have the TG on the front that everybody sees on our social media channels. And on the back, it has our slogan asking, "Are you a thrill geek?" And very simple, very minimalistic shirt. I got a lot of praise from people about it. And the first shipment actually did pretty good. I didn't actually get a final count of how many orders were placed on the first group.
I think you said at least 15.
Yeah,
something around.
So not a lot, but enough to. I've always had people asking me for shirts ever since I started Thrill Geek. When are you gonna do shirts? When are you gonna do shirts? So they're here. You go to thrillgeek.com/shop and order it. And like I said, it takes a few days because this website that I'm doing it through, they take them and then process them and ship them out in kind of a bulk setting. So the shirt.
And the good thing with the shirts is it helps support us so we can continue to improve Thrill Geek.
Yeah, all the money that we make from the shirts will literally go right back into the site, whether we need, and I posted this on Twitter, whether we need new equipment, whether we, hosting for the website, all this podcast stuff costs money, monthly hosting costs. I make sure that it all goes back into the website in some sort of fashion. I want to expand into more merchandise. I want to do stickers that we can hand out to people in the park. So that costs money. So all the money that is made from this t-shirts will be funneled right back into the website in some fashion. So get your t-shirts, help support a pretty cool website. At least I hope you think it's cool. I'm trying to make a pretty cool website. And also subscribe to our YouTube. Like I said, what we talked about today, we got the Epcot videos up there from the 35th, Halloween Horror Nights videos. We always got stuff going on there. So subscribe at youtube.com/thrillgeek. Follow us on Twitter at thrillgeek. And Barry, I'll
and Instagram.
You. Yep, Instagram. Thank you. And
Instagram at ThrillGeek. Like and follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ThrillGeek. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at CultureInThrills, because I also post there when I'm not posting on our ThrillGeek Twitter and Instagram accounts.
Yeah, I have a personal Twitter account, but I keep it kind of private. Some people follow me because I interact with everybody through the ThrillGeek account and stuff. So, yeah.
And remember, when we're in the parks, just come up and say hi. We're always in the parks.
Yeah, we'll be wearing our shirts, so if you ever see us in the parks, don't be afraid to say hi. I always like meeting new people. And so, yeah, until next time, thank you guys again for listening. And we'll see you guys again next time.
Talk to you again soon.